Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Two Bros, One Flick. Andy and Sam here as always.
What's up, guys?
Joined again by the wonderful Mr. A.
Hey guys, glad to be back.
How's it going, man?
Oh, it's going.
It's going.
It's going.
Oh, yeah. Well, today we have a special episode for you guys. I guess it's always special because it has Mr. A in here.
Yeah.
We're talking a Japanese movie from 1986 called Tampopo, directed by Juzo Itami, and starring, most people would know Watanabe Ken as the guy from Inception and the first Dark Knight movie. I'm trying to think of anything else.
Yeah, he plays the fake Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else.
Last Samurai. Last Samurai with Tom, I'm bruising for a cruise.
Great.
And Yakusho Koji, who is in Shall We Dance, 13 Assassins.
Is he the silly guy in Shall We Dance?
Oh, he's the businessman in Salary Dance. He's that guy. Yeah. Okay. But you guys might recognize him from other things. He was also in... Watanabe Ken was in Memoirs of a Geisha as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And this guy was in Memoirs of a Geisha too.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
I remember him for some reason.
Yeah. I don't remember that movie.
Yeah. They were in it, though.
Yeah.
Oh, he was in Babel, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He was in Babel. He had the deaf girl was his daughter.
Daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a good
one. And it's a movie. Basically, the main plot is
a bunch of people come together and help a woman.
Yeah, help a single mom
make her noodle shop better.
Make her ramen shop a better ramen shop.
Yeah,
right. But interspersed throughout the movie, I'd say it's three series. I saw three different series of vignettes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. About three or four.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like the gangster and his weird
girlfriend, with the fetish.
Yeah.
With the food fetish. And all these little vignettes have something to do with food and kind of culture and in Japanese society.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed. Yeah. I don't know where to start off about it, but to give these people a little kind of a notion of the director, this director was an actor because I think his dad was a famous Japanese actor.
Okay.
But he moved mid-career from acting to directing.
So kind of like Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Except
better.
Much better.
Yeah. You guys didn't like Waterworld?
What's wrong with Waterworld?
Yeah.
I'm talking about
Mr. A.
I'm talking about Dances with Wolves.
No,
I'm not really a fan.
The director made his shift mid career. This is his sophomore effort. With another two good movies right after called A Taxing Woman and Taxing Woman 2, which is basically about the same lady who plays Tampopo is basically Japan's version of IRS agent.
Okay,
and
cool.
The cowboy who kind of saves the day in this movie is actually a crime boss who is stashing all of his money away.
Okay.
And it's all about, like, you know, the little kind of, like, conflict between those two. It's like a love interest thing, but also like a cat and mouse game of tax fraud.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with cat and mouse games.
Right. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that movie, and it was so successful. It had a sequel. He did another movie about gangs and basically Yakuza kind of portraying them as like dumb brutes. And
aren't they dumb brutes already?
Yeah, so they have.
Oh yeah, they beat him up.
They beat him up.
The real Yakuza beat the director up.
After they released the movie, the gang that was portrayed, I don't think he pulled any punches. I think it was he used the actual gang name.
Oh,
okay. It was so close that you could tell what gang it was.
Huh.
They found him at his house and beat him up.
Yeah.
And then he had a movie when he was holed up in a hospital room in Japan. He came up with the next movie about the Japanese healthcare system.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So it's all like, and you guys got this from the movie. There's a lot of dark humor in this movie and throughout all of his movies. And it's kind of sad
style.
Because he actually killed himself because later on it was found out that like a scandalous magazine,
The
Inquirer, alleged that he had an affair.
And Tommy killed himself.
Yeah. The director killed himself, right? And he jumped off his office building. Kind of saying that I'm killing myself to prove my innocence, but at the same time there have been reports about the gangs just didn't let up and they forced him to jump or threw him out the window.
Yeah.
And the family's never talked about it ever since he died. And the wife just started acting again like last year.
Okay.
Wow.
So there's been like a 20-year gap.
Wow.
Just like nothingness after he killed himself.
It's an interesting
backstory. And she plays Tampopo, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's an interesting backstory. I didn't...
Yeah, that backstory, I felt like it's a little interesting tidbit about it.
Yeah.
And his works have been... The Funeral, his first work that I don't like so much, got a lot of publicity and
critical acclaim.
Yeah, critical acclaim, but I thought it was kind of I thought it was kind of slow throughout because it's only just centered around that one funeral.
Okay.
So are all of his films, I mean, I'm not very familiar with the director, Andy, but do they all have the same type of narrative style where there's, you know, a lot of these vignettes that don't necessarily advance the narrative?
That is actually what sets this film apart from all the other ones.
Okay.
Funeral is more linear. Taxing Woman is definitely linear because it's like, you know, the fraud kind of caper deal going back and forth. this one is kind of just sets itself apart because of the vignettes and because, you know, you still have that one story, but then you have the second story. It's not really a story, but it's like a continuance of the Yakuza story because the Yakuza guy, played by Koji Yakusho, he's the guy who starts off the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? And I really like that beginning too.
Oh, how he already breaks the plane.
Yeah. And it was done in a really good way. It kind of reminded me of the Aqua Teen movie.
Aqua Teen, I never saw that one.
You didn't see the Aqua Teen movie? The beginning of it is like this really funny, like 3 or 4 minute music video about how you should turn off your cell phones and stuff. It kind of reminded me of that.
Oh, funny. Funny. Yeah. Like I really enjoy this movie. I've seen this movie. My mom loves this movie.
Yeah.
And my dad does too. But when I was little, they would show me the scene of where the old lady scene where she's in the supermarket.
Oh, yeah. She's feeling everything.
She keeps like that. It's like funny that she's like
messing with all the
fucking around with all the
people. So they didn't show you the hotel room sequence?
They didn't show me any of that. In fact, like the old VHS tape, right? Yeah. So they have to fast forward it.
Oh, okay.
And then like you would land on like the bedroom scene, then they just turn off the TV and fast forward it to the
That's awesome.
But I've seen this movie like a million times.
Okay.
But it's one of those movies that I think if you want to get into any sort of Japanese cinema, especially from the mid to late 80s, this is the way to go.
Yeah. You mentioned something about like it was at the tail end of like the exploitation movies. Because like I thought that like if it didn't have some of the scenes with the gangsters, and then I guess the very end maybe.
Yeah,
where the dude's getting all messed up.
Yeah.
Like this could have probably been like a G-rated movie because apart from those things, like it's all pretty much let's learn how to.
It's pretty light, and the story's interesting.
Yeah,
and you also mentioned too, Andy, that this was kind of made at a time when Japan was starting to ascend again. I mean, what did you mean by that?
Well, that's a good point. So let's say the clash between like East and West. I think there's that vignette of when they're going to eat at the French restaurant.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Right?
And here they are. They're going to be sophisticated. They're going to go eat at that French restaurant. They open up the menu. The fuck, no one can read French.
Yeah.
Except for that one boss. And then they all kind of, all the upper level guys just follow.
The senior makes a decision. He's like, I'll just have Seoul and like this like
a Heineken.
It's like a consommé. And so like everyone's like, yeah, we'll have that too. And then the last dude who I guess is either like the junior associate
or
like
wacky.
just some like dude like assistant or something like that apparently like knows a lot about food and so he's like, yeah, I'm gonna get this complicated thing that has nails
and it just gets funnier and funnier, right? Because the boss is kicking him, is like, shut up
and he's like, no, I'm doing this, let me do this, man, right?
And you can see like there's a definite age gap between that one guy who knows his shit and the other older guys.
Yeah, because that guy like he has a lisp and he sounds
he looks like he's probably
like 18 or 19 or something. He looks really young.
And
plus his teeth are all.
You see
silly.
The clash of like, okay, now the new generation gets it, right? And then you move to the next vignette where they're going to the etiquette class about eating the spaghetti.
Yeah,
and again, it's like the old lady's trying to teach him what it's like, and then they do what the Westerner does.
They cut over to the old man,
And then that's like all young girls is doing as they see it, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like worlds colliding and the world getting smaller around them. And you see the shots of Tokyo, like, throughout, right? And just the fucking monstrosity already.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of scenes with that I thought with, like, kind of clash of, like, here we go with, like, the Western influence. But there's also a scene that... when she dupes the shop owner to tell her the secret to the noodles.
Oh yeah, that was awesome.
She's like, you know, did you not roll it enough or whatever?
Yeah.
You guys didn't know this, but that guy was totally Chinese.
Okay.
And he's Chinese because when Chinese people speak Japanese, they talk. I don't want to say retarded, but
is it a certain clip?
He did sound different from.
Sounds a little.
Most
it's
the
a
other
little
characters.
More like twangy almost.
He sounded like he was.
And he said "shay shay" at the end.
Okay, almost sounded like he was speaking slower.
Yeah, it's more it's more of a drawl
out.
And like
a Texas.
You still see elements of basically back then when it's like competing. Like there's a reason that she could dupe the Chinese man. Okay. That's what it was, you know.
Awesome.
Kind of like that lingering.
Stupid Chinese.
Yeah, xenophobic thing, yeah. Stemming all the way back to World War II okay. and before.
Well, okay. I didn't pick up on those subtleties, Andy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So
I thought he sounded different. He sounded just like real, like lame, basically.
Right, right.
Not uncool, just like, you know, without
And he seemed kind of dense. The way they portrayed him, too, it seemed like he was kind of dense.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He was a dense.
And they do that a lot. Now they do that more so with black people in Japan.
Oh, okay.
It's like the same treatment, but it's
Are there black people in Japan?
There are black people in Japan.
Yeah,
my
best friend Chris was in Japan for
It's
like
either military
years.
Or they're straight from Africa. Yeah. And they're all the English-speaking countries in Africa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they come up and they'll come up to me, well, they'll come up to you when you're walking the streets of Tokyo and be like, and they're really like, you know, you can tell they're from Africa, right?
Okay.
And they start speaking to you and like, hey, in English, come on into my shop, man. I got these shoes. You'll like these shoes. They're all dressed in FUBU.
Awesome. And I fucking love that. That's awesome.
It's they do the caricature thing of like basically any like race, basically, except for white people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's basically yellow people and black people.
Oh, great.
It's very strange.
Super.
Yeah.
Kind of like a beehive almost.
Awesome. Oh, aptly put. Yeah. But it's just every vignette has something cool to say, I think. I'm interested to see favorite vignette and least favorite vignette.
Okay.
And I think my least – well, let's start with least favorite first, and you guys might agree with me on this one, is the vignette where he has the salary man running back home to his dead wife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right?
I didn't understand that at all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like,
I mean, I kind of got it, but that was paced really weird.
Yeah. Slave in the kitchen is basically what they're talking about, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And that's our only purpose in life is to go.
And she just dies from being overworked.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like that vicious cycle, but the last thing she do before she dies is to do her job.
Yeah. That was pretty weird.
But the funny part at the end is, you know, eat your mom's last meal.
Yeah.
But
well, that's still hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
it's still hot.
That vignette is my least favorite just because by that point in time, like, it's pretty far into the movie.
Yeah.
You don't really need that vignette.
Kind of seems tacked on.
Exactly. Yeah. But I guess, do you guys have a least favorite and then we'll get into the favorite one?
That was also probably my least favorite one.
General consensus is that's the one.
It just wasn't that necessary. And, like, the thing right before it is probably my favorite one.
Oh, okay. We'll
get
into that.
That was cool.
Yeah. What about you, Aaron?
Well, I think it's a toss-up. It's between the salaryman vignette and also the other one, the extended bedroom sequence at the very beginning, because...
Oh, with the with the shrimp and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I could see...
That was creepy.
You don't like that one?
Well,
that was a little creepy.
It was kind of creepy. I mean, I could see the things done with the rest of the food, but the shrimp in the bowl...
Yeah, that was a little creepy.
I don't understand, like, they're scurrying around in some, like, vinegar thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, number one, I was thinking to myself, okay, how do they put the bowl on there without spilling it and then the shrimp spilling out?
Yeah.
And then the fact that she's getting a lot of pleasure from that was a little...
Yeah, this girl's a food
weird.
Food whore.
It's a little creepy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the yolk stuff was weird, too.
Yolk stuff is a classic scene, man. Yeah. Right.
I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, I mean,
pooping
I was thinking to myself,
my
when do they make
pooping
9.5 weeks,
butt.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God.
But, yeah, it'd be a toss-up between those two.
Right. Yeah. And favorite vignette, you want me to go first?
You go first. And you didn't do your least favorite one.
I did. I said it was the salary man.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
My bad.
I'm trying
And we were kind of like the Japanese executives, you know? We said, okay.
Yeah, that's his least favorite.
We'll go
it just
that.
Wasn't good. It didn't make sense.
Favorite vignette is I think the favorite vignette, and I have a favorite scene as well. We'll get into the favorite scene.
Okay.
Favorite vignette.
I have a favorite scene.
Is
too.
Probably
that's separate.
God, I mean, there's so many. The French one. Well, they have three vignettes in the hotel.
Yeah.
I'm gonna let you have your favorite vignette by yourself.
Okay.
But actually, you talk about it first because I have to think.
Okay,
my
favorite vignette is the one right before the one where the man goes to his wife who's in like overworks. It's the one where they're in the
grocery store.
They're in no. They're in the restaurant or whatever, and like the first guy opens and he makes like a little peeking mushu kind of thing.
Oh, the
oh,
one with the two
artist one.
The
yeah,
two gangsters.
With the with the con artist.
Yeah,
I just like that. I thought that was a good.
That was a good.
That
one.
Was a cool misdirect.
Yeah, it was a cool misdirect.
Yeah,
I like that one a lot. Yeah. What about you, Mr. A?
Well, again, I think I have two favorites,
okay.
And maybe it's not more of a vignette, but more of a scene. The scene where the whole crew goes into the restaurant, and, you know, here's this old man who walks in and sits down by himself and orders all these things that he's not supposed to eat.
Yeah, that's a cool scene.
And he starts chewing all this stuff back, and he starts choking, and they just get out the vacuum cleaner because everything else isn't working.
Yeah, because they don't know the Heimlich maneuver.
don't
trust
them upside down, right?
Yeah, don't trust people in Japan to give you the Heimlich maneuver if you choke there. Take small bites.
And I think the other one, Andy, you mentioned before, it was the one where the old woman's just walking around the grocery store just feeling stuff.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It's really, like, obsessive the way she does it, too. Like, she's it's clear that she's probably crazy.
Yeah.
Or just
very
senile.
Or very special ladies. Yeah. And that's another one of those things, because that market is a... basically a fancier market where they sell, like, more Western shit.
Yeah, because there were the Campbell's soup, and then, the you know, she was feeling the donuts, and then the brie at the end.
And so the guy's dressed up, like, not like your regular cashier.
Yeah, not
cashier.
Like a normal cashier dude.
Yeah, he's wearing a necktie, right?
Yeah.
And trousers.
And he looks like he's in, like, he's at, like, a soda shop. You know,
he's a soda jerk.
Yes.
He's jerking it.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with Aaron and say that
was your favorite scene?
Yeah.
The one with the old lady. That's a cool scene. I like that one.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
I really like that one. That one was cool because I thought, you know,
I mean, favorite vignette.
I really thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Just when she starts with that peach.
The
other vignette that we didn't talk about, I thought that was kind of weird, is the oyster girl.
Yeah, where was that going?
Oyster girl. I don't know why they had it in there, but I do. I think
that one,
like,
is weird.
It's a holdover because apparently those. Girls, I read about this in a Japanese, like, poetry class.
Oh, okay.
Those people, you know how they're dressed up with, like, those weird scuba masks?
Yeah, they kind of reminded me of something that you'd read about in the Odyssey, you know,
something
like the sirens.
They have a thing in Japan where they would go, and these women would go and free dive for oysters.
Okay.
And it's apparently the women's, a woman's biological structure allows them to go deeper and stay underwater better than a man's biological structure.
I think that's because their lung. It's not that their lungs are smaller. It's just that their chest cavity can
hold more
condense.
Air.
Yeah,
more.
Something like that, right?
Yeah.
And their temperature can stay more regulated. So
those
people, like, women have been diving for oysters since, like, day one in Japan.
Okay.
And if you notice the fact that they're there, but right next to them is a gigantic highway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you see, like, the old profession and, like, this new gangster coming and being like, hey, can I buy one?
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, in kind of that scene, I was thinking to myself, you know, in several of the vignettes, there's a strange connection between eroticism and food.
Yeah, especially with
the
gangster.
Yeah,
the
entire time. I mean, yeah, especially the gangster.
I mean, but,
yeah.
you know, like, it's this sensual experience.
Uh-huh,
and, you know, and especially, you know, when he cuts himself trying to eat the oyster,
uh-huh,
and, you know,
uh-huh.
she sucks the blood off of his face.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Diego did that to me yesterday.
He did.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It was.
I'm glad I wasn't here for that.
Yeah. I really just, like, I didn't want to, I think I told you guys, basically, it's a movie about food and the movie about, like a noodle shop.
Yeah.
But I don't think I told you that there's, like, mini stories throughout.
Yeah, no. I didn't expect
that. I don't know
that.
How you
explain. It was cool, though.
Yeah. So, I guess favorite scene, what you liked in general.
Okay. You want to go first?
I'll let you go first.
Okay. What I liked in general, I really liked the stories, even the vignettes. Like, most of the vignettes were just kind of cool and fun.
Right.
And, like, it's not, like, super out of the ordinary, but it was just, they're good kind of wholesome stories, I guess.
Yeah.
Except maybe the oyster one. That one's a little weird.
Oyster one's a little weird, and that girl looks pretty young.
Yeah.
I think that was the weird part about it. But I think age of consent in Japan is... It's 14.
Really?
Okay.
14 or 15.
Okay, I don't know.
That's Japan.
That's Japan for
you.
Great
job, Japan.
Yeah.
Those stories were just, the storytelling was really good. Mm-hmm. And, like, the way that it's kind of paced, like, there's not a lot of moments where there's a big lull. Mm-hmm. My favorite scene is the one where, like, they visited the vagrants or the vagabonds.
Oh, yeah,
whatever,
yeah.
And they're saying goodbye to the old master,
uh-huh.
and they sing to him. I like that. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was just really sweet.
Sweet.
And he's probably my favorite character.
Uh-huh.
Is the
uh-huh.
old guy.
The old guy was pretty funny in that.
Because he's cool. Yeah.
And was he the soup man? He was in charge
the soup master, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That was your favorite scene, and you talked about it in general, just like the vignettes.
Yeah.
Cool. Mr. A.
Yeah.
Well, to me, I really liked the overall atmosphere of the story. I mm-hmm. thought it was told in a very light, cheeky way.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminded me of Amelie, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of told in that
I
very.
Seen that.
That
oh,
very
you haven't seen it?
No.
Really?
Well, maybe we should put that on.
That should be in the docket.
Okay, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. You like French movies. Yeah.
Okay.
I wonder how many people are having orgasms right now. Yeah. That's in the movie. That's in the movie. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, the whimsical tone. I love the fact that, you know, Goro, the main character, is dressed up, you know, as some guy from a Gary Cooper Western.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that does make it. And the Longhorns on the top of the
On
top of the truck rig, I thought were a nice,
yeah,
nice touch.
It was pretty cool.
But I think favorite scene, it kind of goes on what you were saying, Sammy. Not necessarily when the vagrants all sing to the old master as he's leaving.
Oh,
but
when they first meet him?
When they first meet him, and you have all these guys who, you know, probably dig through the trash, and they're all these experts on French cuisine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need an expert on your wine, you go to the hobos.
Yeah, that's right. They'll give you a blend.
And then on top of that, you know, the next scene that follows is when the little boy asks for a rice omelet.
Oh, yeah, that's also really good.
Yeah, and they break in. Where did they break into, Sam?
It was some sort of restaurant that he had been in.
Yeah, I think it's a restaurant that he had been in, or it might just be someone's house.
Yeah, the kitchen looked kind of small, right?
And yeah.
But yeah, I really like that scene too.
It's like they knew how to get into that kitchen. Right?
Yeah, and he knew where everything was.
The go-to spot, right? Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot. I like that that scene especially because the soundtrack, I think he does a really good job with using musical cues and to like take you back to places because that sounded like, you know, like The Sting. Don't you think so? The piano parts and everything like that?
Yeah, it kind of did.
Yeah.
And I was going to say something about the soundtrack. I thought it was interesting. You know, in the very beginning of the movie, you got a lot of Mahler cuts being played. And, of course, that music is not usually associated with something that's as light fare like this.
Right. Yeah.
I was thinking about that, too. Actually, yeah, sometimes I like the music a lot. But, like, once in a while, it seemed like it was, like, weirdly serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Even when something kind of fun was going on
in screen. General, I guess it's my turn. In general, I like it... I like the movie in general, but I thought it was kind of cool because you watch like these three main actors, right? And like the wife.
Yeah.
The Watanabe Ken, I think it was Mr. A who said that he didn't even recognize Watanabe Ken.
No, I didn't even recognize him.
He looks so young.
Looks fucking young, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I expected him to look young, but he looks like very, very young.
Well, I guess we're also kind of used to him playing, you know, authority figures.
Yeah, that's true. That too. Yeah, and this time he's playing second fiddle to his cowboy boss.
Yeah, some guy that just likes to eat and help out, do stuff.
Yeah, and wear that awesome white outfit.
Giving high fives to all the makeup artists.
Yeah.
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 And it's fun to see him how fucking tall he is compared to all the other Japanese guys.
I forgot how tall he was.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then after that, he kind of blew up. I think he was in the early 90s, he kind of had this kind of... really famous role for he was basically kind of like a Japanese Columbo, but a samurai. He was basically a doctor who was like a samurai at night and basically like Sherlock Holmes who would go. But
is it like a TV show?
Yeah, it's like a TV, like a Columbo series.
Oh, okay,
like a movie.
Okay.
But in samurai,
samurai. His name's like Bayon. You could rent it on Netflix actually.
Oh,
they just released it. It's really kind of cool. Then he actually. Got divorced from his wife and went bankrupt. And this is before the Batman movie. He hit hard times big time.
Wasn't doing a lot of commercials, I think. I might have read that somewhere before he got cast in Last Samurai and
Batman.
Exactly.
Huh. Last Samurai and Batman were kind of what saved him.
I didn't know that.
It was kind of going downhill.
He also did Last Life in the Universe, right?
I don't know. It's like a
Japanese romantic movie.
Okay, but in general, I just like it as a Japanese stepping stone for cinema for so many of these actors.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those movies that when it came out in the West, it kind of took it by storm. It was on a lot of top ten lists of the year. I think Roger Ebert really, really, really liked this movie.
Yeah, and on that note, I was doing a little bit of reading on the movie before coming over here.
Uh-huh.
And on Rotten Tomatoes, I think it's got like a 95% certified fresh rating.
Cool, cool, cool.
And I can see that. I can see why it would be so high.
There's a lot of stuff to like about it.
There's a lot of stuff to like about it. It's a very creative. I thought it was creative because I haven't seen a lot of movies where it's like we're going to have the vignettes and then we're going to have the main story.
Yeah, it actually kind of reminded me, this would probably be one of the earlier movies that kind of does that.
Yeah.
That's kind of for a wide release where you have a lot of miniature stories going throughout that are interwoven.
Because,
I mean, this is before Babel and all of Paul Thomas Anderson's earlier work, like Magnolia and stuff. Because this is 86?
86 is what it said on the DVD.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I good.
Yeah, I thought it was good. Favorite scene of the movie, I guess maybe in general I like it when they're snooping in on all the other shops.
Yeah, okay. Doing the research.
Yeah,
doing the research. Oh, and that's cool. Like when they go to the train station ramen shop and the guy's like, this guy remembers all their orders.
Oh, yeah, and
no
she remembers
what.
All the names.
You know, I thought that's cool. And those. Each one of those things, I feel like as far as the main story goes, there's not a lot of fluff. It's all kind of...
It's all important.
It's all important.
Yeah.
Right? And I guess the vignettes serve as the fluff, but most of the time the fluff is...
Interesting.
Pretty fun to watch. And there's always
good
a little bit you
throughout.
Can get out of it. Yeah. Yeah. Bad things, what you didn't like. I think I'm going to chalk my bad scene up to that
me too.
Salaryman vignette.
Yeah, that was weird.
At the end. But let's talk about bad things that detracted from your movie watching experience.
Yeah, it was really only that one scene with the dude's wife who dies. And he makes her make dinner.
I thought it was funny, nevertheless.
It was funny. It was funny.
I didn't like that. I didn't think it was funny, really.
I thought it was funny.
Like,
it
was
so dark.
I just thought it was sad. Like, I didn't think it was funny. I know it was supposed to be funny, and I was like, haha, you tried. But in my head, I was just like, that's not that funny.
Yeah. 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 Right on. Mr. A, what do you say about things that detracted?
Things that detracted, I think, you know, I mentioned it before, you know, the little shrimp on top of the woman's.
That's going to be in your dreams tonight, man.
No, yeah.
That's really, that was pretty creepy.
It was kind of right. Like, well, that was surreal, and maybe let's not go there again. But
it's placed really low down, too.
Yeah, I thought it was right on top of the area, you know?
Yeah. The fun area.
Great.
But that, and then... I think, you know, we mentioned the salaryman vignette and also the oyster one, because it kind of seemed like
it
kind of seemed like it was just misplaced.
Yeah. It's like he didn't know where to, because I don't know. Did that come right at the end of his egg yolk vignette?
No.
It cuts right to the girl, or does it?
No.
Isn't he just walking on the beach?
There's
somewhere?
More time. Yeah.
He's just walking on the beach, and that's.
It's just like in it. It's in it a little later.
Yeah. I understand about that because
that's,
I mean.
That one was weird, but I didn't think it was as weird.
Well, yeah, it's definitely not as weird as the shrimp thing.
To me, it was just the placement, though. Yeah, I mean, you know, because you kind of got the story. You know, she's starting to get her step into her own as this great noodle cook.
Yeah.
And then it cuts back over to the gangster who's just walking along on the beach somewhere and encounters this oyster girl.
Yeah.
Right. I wonder, how about I pose this question to you, good sir. What if they put that scene, it was still in the movie, but they put it earlier on in the film?
I think that would probably be okay, because at that...
You're not too vested in the characters and stuff.
Well, yeah, and, you know, at the very beginning of the movie, it's kind of bouncing around, just showing you how frivolous it's going to be and how fun of a movie it's going to be.
Right.
And I think that had there been a little bit of an earlier placement in the movie, like you said, Andy, I think it would have been okay, because you're not, like you said, Sam, not as vested in the story just yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, on favorite scenes as well, it just popped into my mind. I think the scene where Goro and the noodle cook, I can't remember her name's the name of her character.
Tampopo.
Yeah. The name of the movie. You know, when they go into the ramen shop and, you know, the guys have been
there.
Oh,
where all the dudes welcome everybody, that one?
No, not that one. It's just like, you know, they eat their lunch.
Yeah.
And then they just critique the chef.
Yeah.
Is it like, oh, well, you're using, you know, crappy vegetables.
Oh, that's the dream sequence. The dream sequence.
Yeah, it's the dream sequence. Yeah.
Dude, that's a great scene.
Yeah.
That whole thing, and I thought that the first time I watched it, you know, I didn't know if it was a dream sequence or not.
So
I didn't think it was either.
I didn't know if it was either.
I thought that was a job well done.
Yeah.
You know?
They spliced that in.
That was a great scene. The cut that we watched is a little more abrupt with the DVD cut that we watched, because the one that I have, it's not just a straight cut to the next scene. You see, you know,
there are
like
two or three times
a frame
where
of
that.
Black, and then you're into the next scene, which is weird.
Yeah, really strange cuts in
the
film.
Yeah, strange cuts, but that's not
a lot
how
of circle
it is.
Wipes.
Yeah, I saw this. Yeah,
and also the kind of the ones where you do the wipes from the bottom of the screen and
clockwise.
Page wipe? I don't know.
Clock wipe.
Yeah.
Things that I didn't enjoy. And this movie isn't a 10 for me, but things I didn't enjoy, I think it's the fact, Mr. A touched on this one already, when it's basically the last 30 minutes of the movie, things are going to be like she's almost going to get to that pinnacle of doodle making.
Yeah.
And then you still have the Salaryman vignette.
Yeah.
Right? Which was kind of lame. I can understand them closing off the gangster one.
Yeah.
Which they do. And I really like the gangster's character because out of everyone in the movie, he's the biggest foodie of them all.
Yeah,
you know,
it takes food to new heights or new lows, depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah, I think in the first scene alone with them, it's whipped cream, salt and lemon,
honey,
right, and then the shrimp.
Yeah.
And then later on, it's the egg.
And the oyster. Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't with his girl though. It
wasn't with his girl.
Yeah, that wasn't with his girl though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a different squeeze.
It was. that's just a little weird. It's a little weird, but it's legal.
Great.
And it's Japan, so.
Yeah, it's Japan. It's fine. I was just thinking, you know, I thought the way they did it in general, you start off with a couple different scenes right at the beginning. You don't know if that's like, how did it even start off? It started off with people at a...
Well, they're reading the comic book, right?
Reading the comic book and going in and out. So it's like you don't, right from the get-go, you're kind of told that it's going, this is how it's going to be, you know? And I thought I enjoyed that a lot. And you guys caught on real fast. Like, that's how it was going to go. It's one of those movies where I think that if you just sit there and watch it and just take it all in and maybe watch it again later on, like a year later. Because all these vignettes kind of wind up being like almost like Saturday Night Live skits. So like, you remember this vignette?
Or yeah,
like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Here comes one of my favorite.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, it's kind of like cinematic dim sum.
Yes.
Nice. You got all these little bowls and you can just pick and choose as you want, right? Yeah. And then go back to the main dish whenever you want to.
That's very nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want me to start off on a scale of 1 to 10?
Okay. Yeah.
Sure. All right. On a scale of 1 to 10, I will give this one a 9.
Oh, okay.
Wow. I will give this one a 9.
It's one of your higher ratings.
It is one of my higher ratings, and I think part of it is like a sentimental value because I've been watching this forever.
Yeah.
But there are, as far as Japanese movies go, you either get really straightforward Japanese movies that are good, or you get really
screwed
abstract,
up ones.
Screwed up ones that are just not so good.
Yeah.
You know, I can think of a handful of Takashi Miike movies that actually have held, you know, are up to muster, but...
And you don't like Tetsuo the Iron Man?
Right.
You don't like that fun, like, guard defense, like, dance thing he does?
No, thank you.
It's great.
You know, and those are barely. You know, Kurosawa is great, but he would never do anything like this.
No, he's too serious.
He's too serious.
Yeah, but I really like it for what it is as a Japanese film. I think it's one of the better experimental ones. And one of the movies that actually kind of uplifted Japanese cinema to the masses because it was kind of showing you we're kind of getting out of the exploitation because there's a whole 10-15 years of Japanese, like the blind swordsman Zatoichi, where he's always like, there's always going to be some sex scene or some rape scene in it or something.
But aren't they
like
kind of going back toward that? I mean, Andy,
now?
I mean, you know, like films like Audition and some of this other crap.
Oh God, Audition.
Old Boy.
Old Boy's Korean.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I forgive you. That's okay.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's kind of...
I see the Koreans are more mad at you than I am.
But what I mean, I don't know a whole lot about Japanese cinema and the history of it. I mean, my exposure to...
Infernal Affairs.
That was Infernal Chinese.
Is it?
Yeah, it's Hong Kong, dude.
It's Hong Kong, whatever. Man. Yeah.
You're getting your Asians screwed up.
Yeah, man. He's just digging a ditch, man.
I don't care.
Yeah. But to answer your question, I guess there's some... There's still... All the ones that are like straight up like it's exploitation, it's direct to video.
Like it's clearly direct.
But
what about 13 Assassins was super violent?
Well, yeah, but that's not really like a sexploitation type of thing.
Oh, I thought you were talking about just like
gruesome violence. Well, that's Takashi Miike, who did Audition as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you haven't seen 13 Assassins, Aaron, I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen Ichi the Killer, I would not recommend it. Don't do that.
I have been toying around with seeing that, and
it's not good.
I'm leaning heavily toward the no. I mean,
it's just like over the top.
That's just like a gorgasm flick.
I mean, you know, I mean. In films that I've been interested in watching, you know, that I've been feeling, you know, I don't know if I really want to watch this. Usually it's like, I don't understand why I just watched that. Case in point, Salo.
Yeah, which I have not watched, and I don't know.
You don't want to.
And I don't recommend it. It's not that good.
So, I mean, I would... So you're saying Ichi the Killer Ichi, is kind of like on the Salo scale,
A lot of Takashi Miike's, like Visitor Q.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch Visitor Q.
Yeah, I've seen Visitor
Q. That's all about incest, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a line between you know, cinema that pushes the edge and trash.
Yeah, yeah. That's Takashi Miike doesn't know the line most of the time. But 13 Assassins is his first like linear... like
Outrage is also...
Outrage is beat Takeshi, though. I'm talking about Takashi
Miike. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I'm tossing around names that all sound alike. But
well, no, I mean, like, I thought you just meant like all Japanese.
No. But Japanese cinema, yeah, there's some aspect of that. But the stuff that you get to Western audiences, probably keep it more classy. I think.
Yeah.
They're taking themselves more seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know a whole lot about Japanese cinema, Andy. But I mean, like, you know, Kurosawa. That's the one hook that I have into Japanese cinema.
What's a great hook to have, though?
Yeah.
That's, some would say the only one that you really need.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I kind of like this one. It's a 9 for me. I would recommend watching it if you want to watch a foreign film that's fun. I guarantee you'll like it. I don't know just how much you'll like it.
Yeah.
But as far as Japanese movies go, I figured I'd toss this one in the bag for you guys because none of you have seen it, or I'm pretty sure none of you had heard about it before.
I hadn't heard of it until you mentioned it last time we met up.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you talked about it like a long time ago when we first started to...
And it's just like,
and I hadn't heard of it before, but it sounded cool just because there's so much food in it.
Yeah, and it's a foodie movie. Yeah. When foodie movies or foodie culture really isn't like a big thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Which I thought was kind of cool, and again, very particular, peculiar to have in a Japanese movie, because it's like half and half of the foodie stuff is China. You got foreign and then totally Japanese, but actually ramen isn't Japanese; it's Chinese.
Yeah, that's so. What I remember you saying that before.
But moving on.
Soba noodles are in it, though.
Soba noodles are definitely Japanese. Yeah.
Mushu, man.
Mushu is good Chinese food, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
They didn't have sushi in this, did they?
No.
I just thought of that.
That's weird. That's actually a good point. Because everything they serve up,
they do have the seaweed, but seaweed's popular.
Seaweed's in everything.
Like everywhere, yeah.
You got the dim sum on the train.
Yeah.
You've got the mushu pork. You got the Korean short ribs.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You got the French food.
But you don't have sushi.
No sushi. And maybe that's another thing where he's like, we're not going to have any Japanese food.
Fuck sushi.
Everyone's not eating straight up food that's, except for when the guy chokes on his own
shit.
Well, maybe that's goes to what you were talking about before, Andy. I mean, you know, maybe Japan in the post-war period starting to open itself
more
up to...
He's trying to show like the multicultural facets of something that's just normal.
It's all pervasive in their life. And I think that's another thing is showing like, you know, it's so obvious that food is a big part of everyone's life. But it's like the meaning of it and... what people would like to eat with it.
Or do with it.
But you know, like, watching them kill the turtle, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's very foodie and, like, how they talk about food.
Is turtle popular in Japan? Do you know?
I'd say so, but Suppon's kind of different. It's very interesting. And I think what he did when he bled it, I think he bled it into rice wine. And they were going to mix that up and drink it.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Yeah.
Is it like how do they actually prepare it? Because it just showed him kill the turtle.
It's either a stew, I think. Yeah, I think it's more of a stew.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Put the meat chunks in there and just
have a nice broth with blood.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's cool.
I know we all got hungry here, but you guys still need to do your ratings.
Oh yeah. I would probably give this a strong 8.
All right.
I liked it. Just because I liked it in part because of all the food stuff.
Figured you would.
I don't really think I'm that big of a foodie, but I just like watching cooking stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what probably a solid
nice
70% of the movie is.
It's a lot of it. Yeah.
So I like that stuff. And then I just thought the story was fun and kind of lighthearted. Some of the vignettes were a little goofy. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
I liked it. I would recommend it. I don't know if. Like this is kind of hard to find,
right? It's on DVD.
Is there a Blu-ray version of it, Andy?
There is a Blu-ray version. But they have the original Japanese Blu-ray version, which will have English subtitles on it, but it'll cost you like $70 because that's how much Blu-rays run you in Japan.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, and then the pricing, the logic of pricing in Japan is really dumb, but I'll get into that later.
Okay.
And there's one in Germany, and I don't know how the hell. They have one in Germany.
Well, the Germans and the Japanese, right? I mean, they've always had a long relationship.
That's how it goes. Right. And I think as part of it is the people that had the DVD rights, I think that business or distributor just went out.
Yeah.
And so now
it makes sense with the terrible covers they have on their movies.
Yeah.
And was this a remaster that we watched?
I think it was a direct transfer.
Because I did notice there was a lot of pop and a lot of grime in the frame.
Well, they had like the cigarette burn each time they needed to change the spool. So that's probably just direct.
Yeah, I'd say it's direct.
Because I think this in a Blu-ray transfer, I think it would be
I hope it would be
fun.
Yeah, especially because of the food.
Yeah,
food would look great. Yeah. I think the colors would pop out more.
Well, yeah, especially the sequence, especially that sequence toward the end after they redecorate her.
Oh yeah.
It looks
restaurant.
It looks almost washed out because it's so bright.
Right. You know? Yeah. But you know, I think that's another thing about you see how it was the dirty old wooden Japanese kitchen,
and they replaced it with something that looks like
Mediterranean.
A
yeah, exactly.
It looks Mediterranean.
And she has the Western dress on with the goofy hat.
Yeah, she has a French sous chef's outfit.
It's one of those things. I'm gonna try to get it on Japanese Blu-ray. Their logic is that if you buy the movie, it's like you own it, so like you're gonna watch it all the time. Same with DVDs and of concerts.
What
you'll
about
pay
video
ticket,
games?
You'll pay ticket price $60 for video games.
Okay, so that's
but insane. like if you buy a concert DVD, it's the price of the ticket essentially because you get to relive it. Yeah.
Oh. Well, I can see how that would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's $75 for a concert DVD.
It's kind of lame, but whatever.
Yeah. It's expensive. But,
you can pirate it.
Yeah, man. Right on. moving on to Mr. A.
Hey, man. I really enjoyed this movie.
Cool.
And, you know, I did think it was like cinematic dim sum because there's just so much that you can take and choose from that's enjoyable.
Right.
I love the story. I thought that the vignettes, they added a nice flavor.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how he's doing this. Yeah.
Nice.
Look how proud he looks when he does
all these
it too.
Puns.
Nice flavor to the movie, and I thought it was a very satisfying experience. So I'm going to give it a strong 8.5.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. All right. I'd say it's I'd say it's for anybody like a foreign, maybe just a film buff in general.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
there's just a lot of stuff you could take from it that was like, oh, that was clever. Oh,
yeah,
that was cool.
Yeah.
Even if you don't like Aaron and Mr. A and I. Did not catch the.
I did that too already.
I did not catch the thing with the Chinese gentleman.
Yeah,
when she was like making him look like a dink.
Yeah,
but I think we thought it was cool just because she was being so clever.
She was duping
you know?
Him,
and it was kind of fun to see her in that scene because prior to that, she's actually throughout the movie she's just kind of like docile and quiet, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then you see kind of,
and then she livens up and is like, "I'm gonna trick this fool."
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm glad you guys liked it. I think he directed the movie and he also wrote it.
Okay.
Yeah. And he did I think he writes most of his movies or has the idea of the movie and then writes it with someone else.
Okay.
So it was his baby and I think it worked out well for what it could have just been bad. But I think
I think it could have been bad in the sense that it's so ambitious. It does a lot of stuff.
It does a lot of stuff. But
you're asking the audience to come along with you too.
Yeah, that's
true. Because there's not really until the last 45 minutes or so any type of linear narrative. I mean, it's bouncing around and all over the place.
Yeah, especially when you first start, you don't know if the story for Tampopo is gonna be the main story or if it's gonna, because it keeps branching out to different vignettes.
I think the hook is though the food.
Yeah. The food for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
It
pervades everything
with the food. I would be interested to see how long. At the beginning of the movie, how long the movie stays on the main narrative before it goes into the series of vignettes each time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it
I
seems
think it
like
shifts
like,
back and
yeah,
forth.
Yeah, like a
10
minute thing. And then I really like how it transitions into the vignettes, though. Especially the first one.
Yeah, they all seem organic, too.
Yeah.
Except
for
the ones that we mentioned that did not seem to fit.
Yeah. But I liked it. And I know I'm glad Mr. A could show up again. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, guys.
We're
love
looking forward
this.
To your next pick. And I can't wait to see what it is.
Yeah, likewise. It should be good. As always, we appreciate your questions, comments. If you find a copy of Tampopo, tell us what you think about it, if you liked it or not. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.